Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and earned master's degrees in social work and public health from the University of Michigan. After working for the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation and the Thompson Macaulay Foundation, she joined the Skillman Foundation in 2004. In 2014, she became its president and CEO. A serial ideapreneur, her name, Tonya Allen, and we're honored to have her as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Tonya Allen, the president and CEO of the Skillman Foundation. That's got a nice ring to it.
I like it. Thanks a lot, Jack, for having me.
Thank you. Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Sure. So I grew up in the city of Detroit, as you indicated. My mom was a single parent, and she married my stepfather, and the both of them raised me. And I feel like I've learned some really important lessons from them. My mother did not finish high school until actually she was an adult, but she forced is probably the proper word on. She really encouraged us as children that we were going to read. So we always had lots of books around our house. And she also really encouraged us to go to college. So it was always a question of when I was going to go to college, not if I were going to go to college. And then my father contributed importantly to my life, and that was basically work ethic. My father had retired multiple jobs. When I was 12 years old, I would work with him refurbishing homes and doing contractor's work. And so those two things, I think, were really important and critical to my life. And then the last thing I would just say is that my grandmother was a community organizer. And she had the heart. She was 5 feet tall, but she had the heart of probably a 6'7" person. It was big. And she always helped. And she always thought about how community could work together to make it better for the people who lived in the neighborhoods.
Tonya, you love children. Where did you get your love for children?
Well, I think I love people, and children are people. And so I'm passionate about children because I think about the quote from Frederick Douglass that it's easier to fix children than to fix broken men. And so for me, it's about if we want the society that we desire in this country, that we have to really invest in our children because they are the carriers of our liberty and our democracy.
How was it you got into this world of foundations?
You know, I got into this world really interestingly. I worked as a community organizer at the beginning of my career. And one of the things that I learned there was power is organized people or organized money. And I felt like there were tons of people trying to figure out how you organize people, but not many people who were thinking about how you organize money. How you organize money to do good. How do you use dollars that are charitable and non-charitable and figure out how they can intersect in a way that would create the results that we would want for our children and for our families and our neighborhoods.
From 1999 to 2000, you worked for the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation. Tell us about Charles Mott.
Well,
and the foundation.
Yeah, well, the foundation is a national foundation right in Flint, Michigan. They've done a tremendous amount of work to strengthen that city despite its challenges. And one of the things that I was able to work on while I was there was to think about national policy around after school funding and programming. And so at the time, the foundation had done tremendous work in helping to establish the 21st Century Community Learning Centers, which still exist today. And that was the federal government who put money into multiple states and into multiple communities to help advance community schools, which the Mott Foundation is known for and actually birthed out of the city of Flint.
From 2000 through 2002, you worked for the Thompson Macaulay Foundation. The famous Bob and Ellen Thompson. Tell us about Bob Thompson.
Well, I would say Bob and Ellen are probably the most generous people I know. They're just good, solid people. And the thing that struck me most about working with them and for them was that they really had a commitment to make a difference, and they didn't want to hold their wealth for themselves, but they really wanted their wealth to contribute to young people and creating the kind of life that they were able to achieve. And I think that you see that in their businesses, their investment in university prep across the city of Detroit, and all kinds of things like Bowling Green University, which is their alma mater. They have invested tremendous amount of dollars there to do scholarships. And they're just, I mean, I can't say it other than they're just really good people.
Two men that have spent hundreds, if not thousands of hours helping them, gratis. Ed Parks and Joe Hiranzi.
Yes, exactly. And I think that they were attracted to the work because of Bob and Ellen. I mean, their spirits were, we're going to create change. And Ed, who you know is a partner at
Plant Moran.
Plant Moran, thank you. is a generous guy. And when you hear his story about how his father, who was a newspaper publisher, and how he contributed to the community, you understand how he gets that solidly. And the same thing for Joe Hiranzi. I mean, both brilliant men who have great hearts to go along with it.
We're talking to Tanya Ellen. When we come back, we'll ask her about the fact that everybody who's in a nonprofit wants money from these foundations. How does she say no? I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and with Tanya Ellen, who's been with the Skillman Foundation since 2004. Tanya, when you're in a position where you're doling out other people's money, mm-hmm. you've got to be a fiduciary, you know, cautious. Everybody wants to have you help them help their cause. How do you learn to say no?
Well, you're right. So my job is to be a steward of these resources that have been given to the public through the Skillman family. And so I often talk about this as I, you know, when you start working for a foundation, you're automatically prettier, smarter, and more charming than you've ever been before. And so you have to always remember that you're, that you, people look at you differently. And you have to make sure that you don't think of this money as your money, but really that you're a good steward of it. And so the way that I think about it and the way that I'm capable of saying no to many good organizations is I focus on what the impact is. Everything that comes before me is good. They're absolutely, you know, every project is doing something good and charitable that's benefiting people. What I'm looking for is it going to give me the greatest impact based on the goals of the institution? And that's how I make a decision. And I often think about, because it's not my money, right? And I'm acting as a steward, I try to be very kind and courteous and helpful to the people that I say no to. Just because we're not the right fit for them does not mean that they can't be a good fit for another institution, or that if they did a couple of other things that they might be eligible for the foundation's investment or investments from other institutions. So it's really about, for me, growing the field regardless if we can invest in them directly or not.
2004, you joined Skillman. How and why?
Well, in 2004, I joined the Skillman Foundation because Carol Goss had just been named president. I had worked with Carol to help establish the Detroit Parent Network and got to know her very well. And she asked me to come because she really wanted to make an investment in neighborhoods. And I had spent a tremendous amount of my career working in neighborhoods through the Casey Foundation, working on the east side of Detroit at Warren Connor Development Coalition. and my work through the Detroit Parent Network, that there are lots of families and communities, and we're trying to build leaders who could strengthen those neighborhoods as well as schools. And so it was a good fit because I knew philanthropy already, and I knew neighborhoods, I knew Detroit. And I think that she felt like I was enough of a risk taker that I could help move the foundation out of its pretty traditional box, which was, I used to describe it as a mix between a law firm and a university. So you could tell that was, you know, it was not a very proactive and outreaching institution as much as we are today.
We're talking to Tonya Ellen. Tonya, tell us about Robert and Rose Skillman.
Well, Mr. and Mrs. Skillman came from Minneapolis, and so we were really grateful to have them come to the Detroit area. It became their second home. Mr. Skillman, Robert Skillman, was actually an executive at 3M. And he came here because he had health problems. And while he was in Detroit, 3M called him and said, hey, we want to break into the auto industry. And so he then came out of retirement for health reasons to actually help establish the 3M enterprise in the auto industry. And his claim to fame was he found the guy who created waterproof sandpaper. He died fairly early. His wife, Rose Skillman, lived for many years after him, and she was very passionate about animals and dogs, horses, and specifically very passionate about vulnerable children. And so she established the Skillman Foundation in 1960, and she served as the president until 1984 upon her death.
Skillman Foundation today has $430 million. 25 full-time employees. Tell us about the Skillman Foundation.
Well, the Skillman Foundation is committed solely to improving the odds for Detroit's children. So we do that. We think the biggest indicator that will change the trajectory of a child's life in the city of Detroit is whether or not they graduate high school, ready for college, or ready for work. And so I often describe that when I'm talking to parents as simply as, after they graduate high school, they will not live in your basement. We want them to be able to go and go on and to create a prosperous future for themselves. And the way that we do that is really by working in six neighborhoods in Detroit, which constitute about 30% of the child population in the city. We focus on improving schools, creating youth opportunities, youth programs for them outside of school, increasing safety, building the community leadership around those children that will help protect them and create systems of care. And then last, really trying to make sure that we're bringing innovation into the work and into the nonprofit sector. As you know, the nonprofit sector has been pretty static for a long time. And what we want to do is try and make sure that we're helping nonprofit organizations learn how to be for impact, not nonprofits. How to be for impact. And that means for us that they are sustainable institutions and that they are generating revenues that actually will keep them in business to serve their populations that they care most about.
Skillman has six core values: stewardship, integrity, excellence, inclusiveness, and equal opportunity, service delivery, effectiveness, and respect. If you would, talk a little bit about excellence.
Well, excellence in our mind is about setting goals, being intentional about achieving them, and doing it with the highest quality as possible. So we focus predominantly, I think in a lot of ways, the Skillman Foundation is different from other institutions and other foundations because we're really clear. We set a goal and we hold ourselves publicly accountable to that. And usually I think you'll see in other foundations, they set aspirations and they hold other people accountable to those aspirations. We try to focus on them ourselves in partnership with our nonprofits that we provide funding to. And so this notion of improving graduation rates for kids in Detroit, for example, we focus on 90%. We want 90% of the kids in these targeted neighborhoods that we're working in by the end of 2016 and 17 to graduate from high school. And the way that we're getting there, we've improved graduation rates by 15% overall and by 20% for boys of color in these neighborhoods. And we know in order to reach that goal that we have to increase graduation rates for 600 more kids in order to achieve it. And so we focus on not only that 600 kids, but how do we make sure 600 kids will always graduate so we will sustain our rate at 90% for the long haul?
Tonya, any organization is only as good as its leadership. And the Skillman Foundation has been blessed to have as its chairman of the Board of Trustees, Beth Artizana. Can you talk to us about Beth?
Sure. Beth is an amazing woman, and she is contributing in so many ways across our region, and Skillman is just one of the beneficiaries. Beth runs a company which is a supplier for the auto industry, ASG Renaissance in Dearborn, Hispanic woman, Cuban ethnicity, and she is a dynamo. I mean, she really is focused on helping us as an organization to pay attention to the political dynamics, really focus on goals and achieving those goals, and making sure as an organization that we're engaging all of the talented people on our board. We're really blessed in a lot of ways to have such fantastic people. So like in the last year, we've had Mark Royce join our board from GM, as well as we've had Bill Emerson from Quicken to join our board. And we have so many others who are doing amazing things on their own. And so what we try to do, and under Beth's leadership, is to really make sure that we're engaging all of them and that they're bringing all of their talents and connections to help advance the work of the foundation.
In a previous segment, you mentioned that you came to Skillman because of Carol Goss, who was the CEO from 2004 through the end of 2013, a legend. You've replaced this legend. Tell us about your predecessor, Carol Goss.
Well, I think Carol Goss is probably the most gracious woman or person I've ever met. I mean, she just is a class act, and she often she has a soft touch about her where she provides grace to other people in their errors. She is always listening. She wanted to be accessible, but she also was a dynamo for change. She was very focused on creating change and transitioning the foundation to be better positioned to do that. And she was a mentor to me and a mentor to many others. Carol, my entire time, she really created opportunity for me to grow professionally. And in a lot of ways, I have been really blessed to have worked with her side by side because we co-created much of the work of the foundation. And so when her departure came and I was able to take leadership, it was not me coming trying to learn the job. I knew the job. And so I was better positioned based on having a platform where I could pivot the organization to move towards new goals, new objectives in a different way, but still in the same spirit of Carol Goss.
We're talking to Tonya Allen, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasul, and with Tonya Allen, who is co-chair with four others of a new coalition, 36 people, John Ricolta, Angie Reyes, Wendell Anthony, Roy Roberts, Faye Nelson, David Hecker, Charles Beckham, Mark Royce, and others. And you're coming up, you've got 90 days to come up with a new concept that you're going to present to Governor Snyder. Tell us about this initiative.
Yes. Yeah, so as you named off some of the coalition members, you can tell this is a coalition of unlikely allies. And that was really the intent behind it. What we tried to do was we recognize at this particular moment in our city and in our state that we actually have a window of opportunity to improve education. And what we were trying to do was to really think from the community's perspective, what should we do, and come up with a set of solutions that would be based in Detroit that would improve Detroit education, but also give some ideas about how we would improve education for the state of Michigan as well. And we really wanted it to be wedded and embedded inside of the city of Detroit so that if the governor, if the legislature, if the mayor were to take these recommendations, that the community wouldn't be fighting because they thought it was top down, but rather that it's coming from the community up. And so we have organized around the simple frame of 70-20-10. 70% of what needs to happen in education, we can agree to it. 20% that we probably disagree, but we can negotiate on it. And 10% that we'll never agree on. But instead of starting with the 10%, we want to start with 70% and work our way up. And that's really the intent behind it. So we're going to produce a set of recommendations that tries to answer six questions. One is, what are we going to do with the debt that is on the backs of children at Detroit Public Schools? They're little more than $500 million worth of debt in the district, and that equates to about $1,200 per child. And then the second was, how do we rationalize the schools so that we have better education environment in the city of Detroit? We got lots of authorizers, about 12 authorizers. You got Detroit Public Schools, you have EAA. They're all working in this market without any coordination and without any standards of how we start to measure supply and demand of schools and neighborhoods across the city. The third question is, what are the common services we need to provide across all of those systems, not just focusing on one, but if kids go to all of those systems, then we need to care about all of them, and we need to think about them cohesively. And then the last three questions are really the same question, but in different, we try to answer it based on the different system. What ought the future state of Detroit Public Schools look like? What ought the future state of EAA as a statewide entity look like? And then what's the future state of charter schools? Our charter sector is 20 years old now, and we haven't had much law changes or improvements in that law. So what do we know now that we're 20 years in about charters that we need to reflect and change so that we're stronger and we create more high-quality educational opportunities for our kids?
We're talking to Tonya Ellen, the president and CEO of Skillman Foundation. Tonya, in the Jewish community, in the Indian community, in the Chinese community, there's a culture, great culture, of the importance of an education. It's paramount. How do we get this same culture propagated throughout the inner city community?
Well, I would say that I think that many people in inner city communities and urban communities across the country believe highly in education, and they value it. Now, there are some who do not, but one of the things I would just say related to that is that many of these people are in places, in schools, where there are pretty low-quality schools. And many of them, their parents, if they've lived in that community for a long time, they've gone through low-performing schools, and they've seen their opportunities cut off. And so when they take their kids to those schools, they don't really believe that education can be a game changer in the way that you believe it, the way that I believe it, and many others. And so I think if we really want to strengthen the culture and the aspirations for education in urban cities, then what we have to do is actually improve the education so that people really do see that education can be a game changer. When you send your kid to school every day and maybe your kid doesn't learn how to read and you're not a great reader either, it's hard for you to believe that it'll change their lives, especially when you have adults in these systems who should have done better by them. And I think we have to increase our accountability, and we have to really reinforce it through every program, through every service that we provide, that education is the key, and we have to double reinforce things like literacy and numeracy.
As I listen to people, one theme that comes up over and over is an adult mentor. Cornerstone Schools, Beyond Basics, University Prep, Cristo Rey, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why is the adult mentor, Tonya, so important?
Well, I think when you have an individual adult who takes time to focus on an individual child, you're reaffirming their value. I mean, so of course, kids know that their parents have to take care of them. That's just, we know that, you know, and we take advantage of that if you're a child or so. But when you have another adult who takes care of you and who sees talents in you that maybe others don't, and that they're nurturing it and trying to bring it out, it affirms for kids a set of values that you cannot get outside of that. And some people get it from their parents, and sometimes you need extra supports. And when you think about what's happening in communities, quite honestly, across urban cities, where, you know, sometimes there are only one parent in a household, or sometimes the parents aren't in the household and other adults, like family members, are taking care of children, we have to just reinforce these children's lives with caring adults everywhere they go. So I actually think that, you know, every kid should have at least three caring adults in their lives. You know, ideally it would be two parents and someone else. But if you don't have two parents, then we need to figure out how we get three adults in the lives of a child, be it a teacher, a minister, be it a mentor. We need to make sure that kids are being wrapped up and cared about and individually known by adults in our community if we want them to be successful and if we want them to believe that we believe they are our future.
This is Music to Your Soul. Talk to us about the magic and the power of early childhood education.
Well, early childhood, we know from neuroscience that a child's brain develops the most when they're at the youngest age. And so what we need to do is figure out how we invest more during that time so that kids actually are positioned to do well as they're going into school. So lots of key things like executive functioning ordering skills, traumatic stress, all of those things influence how a child's brain is developed. And if we're not investing positively in a child's brain, it's very likely that we miss a window in which kids can develop and grow and be nurtured, and so that they can be even more effective at school. And we know the literacy gap and the word gap that we're hearing across the country, where poor children hear fewer words than middle class and rich children. And that can be a big determinant on how well they do in school or not. So we have to figure out how we're investing in our children early. We're supporting parents to do that, but as well that we're creating institutions or supporting institutions and schools to do that as well.
You and your team at the Skillman Foundation in December decided to commit $2 million in grants to President Obama's My Brother's Keeper initiative. Tell us about that initiative.
Yes, sure. Well, I'm really excited about this. The Skillman Foundation has, for many years, been focused on improving the outcomes for boys of color. So African American, Latino, Native American, Arab American, and in Detroit as well, Hmong American boys. The reason why is that when you look at the data, boys are just doing worse than girls, especially in urban areas. And you look at it and you understand that there are some things that are specific to boys that we're not handling very well in our school system. And then the other thing is that there are some systematic barriers. And then the last is that we're not giving them the right and proper kinds of support. So we were really pleased that President Obama decided that he wanted to take on this issue at the federal level and to give an umbrella to the people who've been working on this issue across the country, an opportunity to come under the same frame and really drive towards the same set of outcomes. So we have amazing people throughout the city who are working on this issue, who care about it, from law enforcement to schools, to community organizations, to workforce development agencies. We can't leave talent on the table. And I think that's what we've been doing in this region and across the country when we've ignored these young men.
We're talking to Tonya Allen. When we come back, we'll ask her what the children of Detroit have taught her. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to a serial ideapreneur, a master serial ideapreneur, Tonya Allen. Tonya, what have the kids of Detroit taught you?
Well, I think the kids of Detroit have taught me that they're kids. And that sounds so simple, but really, I think a lot of times when we think about children, we're not really thinking about, we think about what they do or they don't do, whether they pass a test or don't pass a test, if they make an error or not. But we forget that kids are children and they need the kind of supports. They need fun in their lives. They're often doing fun things and they want it. I was listening to a young girl the other day tell me, I asked her, what does she want to see in the city of Detroit? Detroit. And she said, I want to see a carnival. I want Detroit to be like a carnival. They have shown us that we have stopped providing opportunities for them, that we don't have the kinds of things that you and I probably grew up with. There are no neighborhood theaters. There aren't bowling alleys or skating rinks or even video game clubs that are going on in our neighborhoods, and we have to figure out how to create that so they can have more fun, and that we recognize that they're kids and they ought to have fun as well as do really well in school.
Speaking of which, the downtown area, Midtown, that's come alive. It's unbelievable. But the neighborhoods, how do we turn around the neighborhoods?
Well, I think one of the ways that we're going to have to turn around the neighborhoods is by making investments in them. So most of these neighborhoods have been divested for a very long time. And as the foundation has invested in 6 neighborhoods across the city, one of the things that we found is that, you know, there's tons of talent, energy, and momentum there. And people are working in those communities to strengthen their neighborhoods. But what they're fighting against are market conditions that does not allow them to be successful. And they also were fighting against some of the municipal practices at the city that just was not conducive to their volunteer efforts. And now that we're starting to get that under control with Mayor Duggan, I think now what we have to do is match municipal practice, strong community leadership and volunteerism with investment from the marketplace. So I think we have to figure, if we want it to happen, we got to attract it, and we have to incentivize that investment. And then what we'll find is that people are going to come back to the neighborhoods if we do those things, as well as improve schools and improve safety.
Tonya Allen, paint a picture for us of what the neighborhoods will be in 2025.
Well, I think what we're going to find is that there are going to be several neighborhoods that are going to be bustling. I think that you're going to find that people are going to start to move towards high quality schools and high quality homes where they can purchase homes. And we have to engage the banks in order to be able to do that. I think we're going to find that the places that have more activities for families, quality of life activities like restaurants, which sounds so silly, but in Detroit, there aren't many sit-down restaurants, and also entertainment venues, that those neighborhoods are going to do really well. And I think we're going to see a lot of investment in those kinds of activities, as well as youth centers and recreation centers in the years to come.
Mayor Mike Duggan, how's he done in the first year?
I think that Mayor Duggan has probably done as best as you possibly could in the first year. I think he is wrestling with some of the practical problems in our systems. He's working those through. He's also giving very practical vision for people to understand what will it take to actually improve neighborhoods. I'm a big fan of the mayor's. I think he's done a fantastic job. And I think one of the things that we have to do is to follow his leadership, because I think in Detroit, one of the ways that you've been successful is if you've done a work around the city. And so now we have a strong mayor with many of these systems getting improved, especially after the bankruptcy. Now what we have to do is figure out how we work in alignment with municipal government, as well as really creating opportunity for everybody in the city of Detroit to be a part of the kind of programs and investments that we're making. I think this notion of inclusion, especially that he championed during his State of the City address, is extraordinarily important.
You mentioned in an earlier segment Carol Goss, the most graceful woman mm-hmm. you've ever met. Well, you have a quiet, soothing confidence and a great grace about you. If a listener says, Tonya, how do I get that? What do you tell them?
I would say have confidence in yourself. Be willing to be bold. Listen to others. Have humility. And I would say be inclusive, understanding that no person has the right answer. My grandmother always used to say that none of us is as smart as all of us. And I really believe that. And that's the way I try to live my life, as well as lead the foundation's work based on that notion.
If a listener says, wow, this young lady, she's given back her whole life, and she sure is giving back now. We're too busy now to give back. When we get older and successful, then we'll give back. What do you say to them?
Well, I would just say that we can't depend on what's to come in the future. The only way that you get the future you want is by creating it in the present. And so one of the things that I'm really excited about is I think that we have a younger generation that really has grown up in service. So we have millennials, which is actually the largest generation since the baby boomers, who are taking over, and they're making a transition. And what I would say to them is, how do you make your mark on history the way that the baby boomers made it during their time of coming of age? How do you really shift and change the trajectory of this country in the way that really helps the country embody and embrace the values that this generation comes forward with? And I think thoughts of inclusion, thoughts of service, thoughts of social impact are extraordinarily important to them. And I think the more we focus on those things, the better off we'll be as a country.
If you had 1 minute commercial on national TV to talk about Detroit and its future, what would you say in that minute?
I would say today is the time for us to focus in on Detroit, that Detroit is a great investable opportunity. We've been like the canary in the mine for many other cities across the country, and that if we focus well here, we can really show how you change the trajectory of urban cities across the world, but also across the nation. I would say that Detroit can do land policy better. We can do education better. I think that we can do leadership better, because one of the things that we have done and we are doing in this city is that we have a diverse core of civic leaders, and that most cities cannot claim that. And so as much as we're talking about the divide in the city, I think right now what we need to do is lift that up. And then I think the last is to point to the example of, if you really want it bad enough, you can create the market that will help support the work that we're doing. And I think Dan Gilbert is a prime example of really leaning in and showing the way of how you can transform a place. And now what we need to do is make that move into the neighborhoods. And those same opportunities that Dan Gilbert has taken advantage of, those opportunities exist for other investors, for social entrepreneurs throughout Detroit, and we want them to come. I would say, come on, we want you. Welcome to Detroit.
Tonya Allen, as our time winds down tonight, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
I would say, live your passion. And I would say, this is your time. This is your moment to learn as much as you possibly can, to work as hard as you can, and to have the greatest impact you can. I think a lot of times we think that we will be better positioned to do it when we're older, but quite honestly, change in this country has always come from young people. And so this is your moment. And I guess what I say to them, take it, and I'm happy to help you with it.
What a great role model. What a great leader for our community. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.